The following is a presentation of the Retro Network.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Abgenommen, bedauert.
Frequency. And thank you all for tuning in, and welcome back to another episode of the Mystery Frequency. Man, I hope you're enjoying this new format, because I sure am. Where else can you get great episodes of detectives like Sam Spade or Johnny Dollar? And at the same time, get some of the classic pulp heroes, the Green Hornet, or my personal favorite, The Shadow. Only right here on the Cloak & Dagger. If you want to say hi, or leave feedback about the show, or just talk about audio dramas, be sure to let me know through the comments on Spotify, my email at mysteryfrequencypodcast@gmail.com, or my one-too-many social media. All those links can be found in the description. And if you're enjoying this podcast, if you keep coming back for more, then please consider following, reviewing, leaving a 5-star rating, and sharing the podcast with anyone you know. And with all that, please enjoy the show.
I see. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Temple, where did the call come from?
It came from my own house, Steve.
From Bramley Lodge?
Yes. From Bramley Lodge.
Hadn't you better...
I'll get on Price and see who's at the house. Hello, miss, will you get me Evesham 9898? Yes, thank you.
Paul?
Yes?
Oh, I know this sounds silly, but how long has Price been working for you?
You don't have to worry about Price, Steve. He isn't the knave of diamonds, I assure you. He looks far too guilty after snaffling one of my cigars. Or perhaps it's the cigar... Hello? Yes, miss. What? But there must be... Out of order? Oh. I see. Thank you.
What's the matter?
There's no reply. Or rather, they can't get the number. There's something funny, Steve. Look here. We must get back to Bramley Lodge as quickly as we can. We must find out who's
Paul,
been there.
The knave must be someone you know fairly well. Otherwise, Price wouldn't have admitted him.
Yes, of course. Miss Parchment... You stay here with Milton and the girl. It's imperative that I get back to Bramley Lodge as quickly as possible. If the knave has been there, and he obviously has, then this is the chance we've been waiting for.
Yes. Yes, all right, Mr. Temple.
Take this revolver. If they try any funny business, use it.
You can't leave us here tied up like this.
Listen,
I'll get Graham to send someone here immediately I get back to the house.
That's all right, Mr. Temple. I shall be quite comfortable.
Good. We'd better take these diamonds. Have you got a handbag, Steve?
Yes.
Ah, splendid. See you later, Miss Parchment.
Yes. Goodbye.
Jump in.
How long should it take us?
About 20 minutes. With a bit of luck, we We should,
Paul, what is it?
I say, did you see that pigeon?
Why, yes, there's a courtyard at the back full of them.
How do you know?
Why, because I could see them from the room I was in.
Good Lord, why on earth didn't I think of...
Paul, what's the matter?
Do you remember the constable commented on the pigeons at the little general?
Well?
Steve, wait here. Stop me a second. Start the car.
Well, what's all the mystery about?
Sorry to dash off like that, but there was something I rather wanted to check up on.
And did you?
Yes, I checked up on it.
Of all the tantalizing... Paul, I just thought. They're carrier pigeons.
Yes. They're carrier pigeons, all right. And now for Bramley Lodge and the Knave of Diamonds.
Dr. Milton, if I've told you once, I've told you 100 times. There is absolutely nothing to be gained by these primitive outbursts. You're staying in that chair until Mr. Temple returns. And if there's any funny business, I shall press this trigger. I shall press this trigger, Dr. Milton.
My God, when I get
shut out up, of Doc, this... Shut up, Doc, shut up. Nothing to be gained by kicking up a row. Well, in the jam, we've got to make the best of it.
Ah, you have a philosophical side to your character, Miss Thornley. I congratulate you.
Miss Parchment, I've come up against a great many people in my time. And a great many, shall we say, awkward situations. But, well... You're sort of different. How do you fit into all this?
Sir, you're puzzled, Miss Thornley.
Yes, I'm puzzled. And so are a great many other people, for that matter. Even the knave can't figure you out. And he isn't often puzzled by people or situations.
Yes. Yes, I can quite believe that.
First of all, you turned up at the little general... By some means or other, you discovered that it was called the Green Finger and that it was the headquarters of our organization. How did you discover that?
I made it my purpose to find out, Miss Thornley. I became interested in old English inns.
Yes, but why?
Because I was pretty certain that the knave would direct his activities in much the same way as he did in Cape Town, from a group of inns all situated in the same area.
How did you know that? How did you know the knave was in Cape Town?
The little general was an obvious choice. It had been for sale quite a little while. And then there was the passage from Ashdown House. I learned about that quite accidentally while trying to gather information about this place.
Miss Parsford, you haven't answered my question. How did you know the knave was ever in Cape Town?
Do you remember a man on the Cape Town Constabulary called Bellman? Sidney Bellman?
What? Yes.
The knave murdered him.
Why are you looking like that?
Good God, she's taken. Put that gun down or it'll go off. Miss Parchman, put that gun down.
Sidney Bellman was my brother.
Your brother?
Yes. And now, my dear Miss Thornley, my dear Dr. Milton, I am going to give you exactly 30 seconds to tell me who is the knave.
All right, but put that gun down. My God,
it's... Keep your mouth shut, you smile. If you so much as... What the... Tom. If we can get him to... Look out, Paul! Look out!
Get into that cupboard.
Mr. Daly, I must ask you...
Get into that cupboard, quickly.
Truth, my head is like a blasted...
Horace, untie this, quickly.
What? No, you don't. So, where's the stuff?
Horace, for God's sake, don't stand there. Get this rope untied. We must get out of here.
Quickly, Horace.
And you two, where's the stuff?
Get the rope free, Horace. And then
I'm asking, where's the stuff? Who's got the diamond?
Horace, we've got to get out of here. We've got to... No, don't, Horace.
Now, listen, Doc. You don't tell me where the stuff is, I'll break every glass.
All right. Temple's got it. I left about 10 minutes ago with the girl.
Horace, where are you going?
Get the stuff back.
You've got to untie us first.
That's your guess, Doc.
Horace, listen. Temple's gone after the knave. He traced a telephone call. You've got to set us free. You've got to...
Well, listen,
you've got to get us out of here. You've got to...
For God's sake, Horace, listen. We must...
Temple's got the diamonds. Right. That's all I want to know.
Horace!
Holland!
That dirty, double-crossing little swine! I get out of here!
How far have we got to go now, Paul?
Not very far, about 2 miles. Steve, you haven't told me what happened. How you came to be at the first penguin.
Well, there's nothing much to tell, really. Early this morning, I received a telephone call which was supposed to be from the paper. They said they wanted to see me immediately. It sounded quite genuine. But when I got outside the flat, I noticed a saloon car. It was drawn up close to the curb. A girl got out of the car and came across to me. I forget now what she said, but before I could do anything, a man came up from behind, took me by the arm, and, well, the next thing I knew was that I was sitting in the back of the car.
Well, thank God Miss Parchment knew about the first penguin.
Paul, who is Miss Parchment?
Her name is Bellman, Amelia Bellman. She's the sister to the man who helped your brother over the Cape Town Simonstone robberies.
Sidney Bellman. But he was murdered by Max Lorraine.
Yes. But from the very moment he was murdered, Miss Parchment made up her mind to track down the knave. She knew quite a lot about the way Lorraine worked. In fact, if the knave had known who Miss Parchment was, then believe me, he wouldn't have wasted his time on kidnapping Louise Harvey.
Does Miss Parchment know who the knave really is?
No, she doesn't, but I think she's got a pretty shrewd idea. We raided the little general tonight, but the place was deserted. Except for Miss Parchment.
What was she doing there?
Apparently she'd read somewhere or other that there was a passage between Ashdown House and the little general. And she chose tonight of all nights to investigate the fact.
It's perhaps a good job she did, or I might still have been at the first penguin waiting for Max Lorraine.
Steve, you don't know how glad I felt when I broke into that room and saw you there. All the way down to the inn, I was hoping to God you'd be safe.
Well, believe me, Paul, the relief wasn't one-sided.
It's rather funny about Miss Parchment. I tumbled to her identity after we'd visited Ashdown House. You remember I asked you the name of the man who assisted your brother in Cape Town. First, I had a feeling that Miss Parchment might have been his wife.
Does Sir Graham know about Miss Parchment?
No, I don't think so. I'm afraid there's one or two surprises on hand for Sir Graham. And you'll be one of them, Steve, unless I'm very much mistaken.
What do you mean?
Well, when I left the little general, I told him I was taking Miss Parchment back to Bramley Lodge. He'll get rather shocked to find we've visited an outlandish inn known as the First Penguin, captured the doctor and Diana Thornley, recovered the proceeds of the Malvern robberies, and rescued you into the bargain.
Yes, I suppose he will. Paul, why didn't you tell Sir Graham you were going with Miss Parchment to the First Penguin?
I don't think that would have been too wise, Steve. In more senses than one.
Why do you say that?
When Skid Tyler was murdered, it was in Sir Graham's office at Scotland Yard. When Sir Graham and I devised a little plan about an imaginary trenchman diamond, the knave got to know about it. When we decided to raid the little general tonight, the inn was deserted.
Paul, you don't think Sir Graham is the knave?
I don't know who the knave is, Steve. But I know that he's been to Bramley Lodge tonight, and when we... I see that car's coming up rather quickly, isn't it?
Paul, it's one of the cars from the inn.
But it can't be.
It is. It's the red one that... Paul, it's Horace Daly.
Daly?
He's recognized us. Paul, he's got a gun. Look out, Paul. Look out!
Steve, are you all right?
Yes, he hit the window at the back.
Keep down.
Paul, he's going to pass you.
No. We mustn't let him do that. Steve, listen. There's a bridge around the next bend. As soon as we reach it, I'll slow down and let him overtake us. Then we'll force him over the top. It's our only chance.
Yes, all right.
Wrap the rug around your head and keep down.
Look out!
It's only the windscreen. Keep down.
Paul, you're hurt.
No, I'm all right. Here's the bridge. Now keep down.
He's passing us, Paul. Look out, he's forcing you over.
Hold on, Steve. Steve, are you all right?
Yes, I'm all right. Paul, you're hurt.
No, it's nothing. It's only a scratch. I say, we'd better get out of here. Car's half over the bridge. Careful, Steve. Careful.
Paul, look. There's Horace. He's on the side. He must have been thrown out of the car against the wall.
Yes. Yes, he's in a pretty bad way. Wait here, Steve.
I'm sorry, Governor. Honest, am I?
Horace, listen. Who is the knave? Horace.
How is he?
He's dead. We'll have to walk into the village, Steve. It's about half a mile, I think.
Well, this is a surprise.
Right, listen. Has anyone been here tonight since I left with Sir Graham for the little general?
Why, yes, sir. Inspector Merritt.
Inspector Merritt?
Yes, sir. He's downstairs with Inspector Dale and Sir Graham. They're waiting for you in the drawing room, sir. Shall I tell them that you've arrived?
No. I don't want them to know that I'm here. That's why I came in through the back entrance.
I see, sir.
Price, now tell me. How long has Sir Graham been here?
About 2 hours, sir. He rather expected to find you here, sir, when he arrived.
What did he say?
He asked me if I'd seen you, sir, or a Miss Parchment. I told him you hadn't been here since yourself and Sir Graham left for the little general.
Hmm. Was he alone?
No, sir. Inspector Merritt was with him.
Inspector Merritt? Oh, I see. Well, when did Dale arrive?
Much later than the others, sir. He came from Ashdown House, I believe.
Yes. Now, Price, tell me, then what happened?
Then I believe Inspector Dale and Sir Graham went back to the inn, sir. The little general.
Leaving Inspector Merritt here?
Yes, sir.
In the drawing room, I presume?
Yes, sir. In the drawing room.
Did Inspector Merritt use the telephone, do you know, Price?
Yes. I believe he did, now you come to mention it. I was passing through the hall and I heard the bell. You know how it tinkles, sir?
Yes. Then I expect Sir Graham and Dale returned from the inn.
Yes, sir. And almost immediately, two of them departed for Ashdown House again.
Which two? Merritt and Dale, or...
That I couldn't say, sir. I was in the kitchen getting Mrs. Neddy a cup of tea. I heard voices in the hall and then the front door slammed.
What time would that be? About 10:30?
Yes, sir. A little later, if anything, sir.
Hmm.
After a short while, they returned from Ashdown House, sir. And all three of them, Sir Graham Forbes, Inspector Dale, and Inspector Merritt, had been in the drawing room ever since.
Hmm. Is there any ink in here and writing paper?
Why, yes, sir. It's on the desk.
Good. Now, Price, listen. I'm going to write a short note. While I'm writing it, you slip round to the garage, get the small car out, and take it to the end of the drive. Miss Trent is there, waiting. She'll take over. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
Now, Price, this is important. Under no circumstances must Sir Graham, Inspector Dale, or Inspector Merritt know that I've been here. Is that understood?
Yes, sir.
Good. Now, where's this writing paper? Oh, here we are. Do you know, Price, I think this is probably going to be my greatest contribution to popular fiction. Yes, by Timothy, I'm sure it is.
Miss Trent.
Oh, here you are, Price. Good.
Mr. Temple said that you would take over from here, Miss.
Yes, that's all right, Price.
Here is Mr. Temple.
Ah, you've got the car. Good. Now get back to the house, Price, and remember what I told you.
Yes, sir. Good night, miss. Good night, sir.
Merritt, Dale, and Sir Graham are at the house. They've been waiting for me.
Did you see them?
No. Steve, listen. I'm going across the tennis court to the front of the drawing room. They won't be able to see me from there. I shall be gone about 2 minutes. Keep the car running.
But what are you going to do?
I can't explain now, Steve. But as soon as I get back to the car, let it rip.
Yes, yes, all right.
Well, I'm damned if I can understand it. He must have been here nearly 2 hours.
Did Temple say he was coming back here, Sir Graham?
Yes, of course he did, Dale. After the raid on the inn, he departed with Miss Parchment and said he'd meet us here. Didn't he, Merritt?
That's right, sir.
Well, he wasn't at Ashdown House when I left, and I pulled out.
Of course he wasn't. What the devil would he be doing at Ashdown House?
Well, whenever he is, I think he might have telephoned instead of keeping us in the dark like this.
Yes, I agree with you, Merritt.
Well, look at this, Sir Graham. Perhaps this explains why we haven't received a telephone message.
Good God.
Why?
The wire's been cut.
But it can't have been... Unless...
Unless what, Merritt?
I was going to say, unless it's been done quite recently.
I say, Sir Graham, do you know anything about this butler fellow, Price?
No. No, I don't, Dale. And then there's the woman, the woman who says she's Steve Trent's landlady, Mrs. Neddy. She's still in the house, remember?
Yes, you're right, Sir Graham. And she delivered the gramophone record that time when Temple and Miss Trent had...
You don't have to worry about Price. Why, he's...
Oh, what's that?
A stone.
It comes through French windows. Look, there it is.
A stone? But why the devil should anyone... I say, look, there's a piece of paper wrapped around it.
Uh-huh. It's a note.
Listen. Listen.
Well, that's certainly a quick getaway. I see, I see. What did it say on the note?
Yes. Yes, what is it, Sir Graham?
Yes, just a second. Here we are.
Well?
What is it?
It says... Temple Court. First penguin awaiting instructions. Malvern pigeons dispatched. Lord Miller.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Being a private investigator means two things. You can be sure you'll run into trouble, and you can never be sure you'll get out of it. Well, there's not much you can do about it, I guess. Except, like Julie always says...
Walk softly, Peter Troy.
And now Peter Troy investigates the blonde with a delicate air. This girl Julie you met a moment ago... She keeps the bill collectors at bay and generally runs the place I loosely call my office. You'll meet her again in a little while. But right now, I want you to meet the lush lovely this case is all about. Her name is Caroline Varley, but most people call her
Carol.
Oh, sorry, Lawrence. I was a million miles away.
So I noticed. Cigarette?
Oh, no thanks, darling.
Beautiful girl. Soft lights. All we need now is the sweet music.
I don't need a thing.
Delicate. That's the operative word, Carol. Blonde with a delicate air. That's how I'll always think of you.
No. That's nothing.
Oh, dear.
Expecting anyone?
No, and as far as I'm concerned, whoever it is can go jump in the lake.
Oh, better answer the door and get rid of them, darling.
Yes, I guess so.
And hurry back. Huh?
Yes, what do you want? Crack.
Hello, Webster.
Now, look, I can expect...
Shut up, get back inside.
Give me that...
didn't have to do that.
I didn't mean to. He jumped me.
Is he...
No. No, he's still breathing. Where's the package?
In the drawer of that desk. He put it there as soon as we came in.
Good.
Well, what happens now?
We have someone deliver the package for us, that's all.
Anyone in mind?
Yes. Troy. Peter Troy.
Oh, that name sounds familiar.
A private investigator. Canadian. Tough. Very tough. And a ladies' man.
Oh, yes. Of course, I remember now.
Opened up here a couple of years ago. Done very well, by all accounts.
You think he'll do a job like this?
Sure. Afterwards, I'm afraid Mr. Peter Troy will just have to die.
Pity.
Necessary.
Well, into each life some death must fall.
It had been one of those bad months. Seems no one in London needed the services of a private investigator. Money was like chorus girls in Alcatraz. There wasn't any. So to rent collectors and sundry tradesmen, I was but definitely out. But to delicate, dewy-eyed, husky-voiced blondes like Carol Varley, I was but definitely in.
So, to put it briefly, I need protection, Mr. Troy.
Uh-huh. I'll go along with that, Miss Varley. Springtime, a young man's fancy.
This young man is going to try to kill me.
Uh-huh. Well, that's no way to win friends and influence people, is it? Who is the guy?
An irate suitor, Mr. Troy. He wants to marry me. I declined the invitation, and now he's threatened to kill me.
And?
The job pays £100 for approximately 2 hours' work.
That buys you a grade A bundle of protection, Miss Farley. Is this character got a name?
Laurie Webster. He's a very persistent man. He's been pestering me for months. He just won't take no for an answer.
It happens.
Just not my type, you know? Anyway, he's coming round to my place tonight to propose again.
And if you say no?
He said that if he can't have me, no one else will.
It sounds corny, but you want me to be there.
I thought you might be able to disillusion him just a little. If you know what I mean.
I'm way ahead of you.
My address is 15 Carlisle Road, South Kensington. 8:30 this evening.
On the nose.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, ma'am.
Carol.
That's nice.
I'll get some bourbon in.
Bourbon?
Don't all private detectives drink straight bourbon?
You've been reading too many pulp magazines. I'm the exception. Scotch.
I remember that.
The exception or the scotch?
Both. 8:30? I'll see you then.
Hi. 8:30 on the nose.
I like punctuality in a man. Come in.
Thanks.
Do you
get many of these sort of assignments, Mr. Troy.
Oh, well, I was going to talk to you about that. £100, that's a lot of money just to dissuade a guy from carrying a gal off to the altar.
Why don't I go to the police?
Uh-huh.
I value my privacy, Mr. Troy. Don't you? Yeah. Scotch?
Thanks. £100 worth of privacy? Has he phoned you or anything yet?
Oh, he won't phone. He'll just arrive. In the meantime, let's relax, hmm? Do you like music?
Me and Beethoven were just like that.
You can't dance to Beethoven.
Well, that's the point.
You dance very well.
Thanks. It's a nice place you have here.
It's home.
No place like it. But... hold it right there, Mr. Troy. Company, huh? Don't turn around and don't move, Mr. Troy. Nasty way to break in on a dance, mister. Isn't it, though?
Oh, poor Mr. Troy. He danced so nicely.
All right, Carol. Help me set the scene. We haven't much time. Must have a head like a cannonball. Oh, that's all I need. The charming and benign features of Detective Inspector Mellamy of New Scotland Yard bending over me. Ooh, ooh, brother. What are you doing here anyway? Investigating? Yeah, well, I went to report a case of assault and battery. I was just a... hey, where's a cute little blonde bombshell? Which cute little blonde bombshell? The gal who owns this apartment. That smack on the head must have addled your brains, Troy. This apartment belongs to a man. Or at least it did. A Mr. Laurie Webster. What do you mean, did? The aforementioned gent is, I regret to say, very dead. Shot at close range. That's what I'm investigating. Now, wait a minute. Where did all this happen? You got a suspect or anything? Because if you haven't, I might just be able to... the answer to your first question is right here in this apartment. In fact, right here in this room. If you move your head a fraction, you'll see the late Mr. Webster stretched out on the floor just a couple of feet away from you. Yeah, but this just doesn't make sense. As for your second question, yes, I do have a suspect. A private investigator called Peter Troy. Oh, very funny. But I'm not in the mood for jokes. Want to tell me about it? Tell you about it? What would I want to kill Webster for? I've never even seen the guy. Guns on the floor beside you. The Smith & Wesson .32... And I've no doubt your fingerprints are splattered all over the butt. Now, you know I don't use a Smith & Wesson. I got a license to carry a Browning automatic. A license which I regret to say must be withdrawn. Now, look, this is a frame, and you know it, Inspector. They set me up. How did you know about all this, anyway? A phone call, Mr. Troy. The caller said there was some trouble here in Carlisle Road. Yeah, with me right in the middle, huh? Well, it's nothing to the trouble there's going to be, just as soon as I... Secretary Julie's outside... Now, have Miss Summers come in, Constable. Right, sir.
Miss Summers, please.
Oh, Pete, they made me tell them about that girl.
Oh, I get it. I get it all now. Julie told you about the blonde that came to see me this afternoon, the girl who wanted a bodyguard to protect her from an over-anxious suitor, and you think
I think you took your duties too seriously. You didn't have to shoot him, you know.
I didn't shoot anybody.
Oh, maybe the Smith & Wesson belongs to him, eh? He pulled it on you, there was a struggle... You got possession of the gun, pulled the trigger.
Now, look, you know me. I'm the sort of guy that goes around giving people lead poisoning. I could take that weasel lying over there with my hands tied behind my back.
That weasel gave you a fair-sized clout on the noggin, laddie.
Julie, you better get hold of Randell. Looks as though I'm going to need a lawyer.
You're already legally represented, Mr. Troy.
Huh? All right, you can come in now.
Thank you.
Who are you?
Oh, my name's Regan, of Regan, Regan & Forsyth Solicitors. My card. I shall be happy to look after your case. And for the moment, I strongly advise you not to answer any more questions.
Who sent for him?
Yeah, I heard about the disturbance and thought you might need help. Furthermore, I think I can furnish the police with a witness. A witness whose testimony will clear you completely, Mr. Troy.
Well, now, that's more like it.
Where are you going to get this witness from, Mr. Regan?
Now, Inspector, you should know better than that. The defense cannot give away its sources of information at this particular juncture... Now, I should like a word in private with my client, please. This way, Mr. Troy.
Just don't try and leave this flat, either of you. Well, now, Mr. Regan, I think it's all very charming, but...
You're in trouble, Mr. Troy. Bad trouble. Hmm? In fact, it would seem that you could wind up with a rope around your neck.
Yeah, but I thought you said something about a witness.
Yeah, I did. But I omitted to say in front of the inspector that my particular witness, if she gave her testimony, would most certainly take you straight to jail. You see, Miss Carol Varley was here when you shot down Laurie Webster.
Well, I know that she was... Ah. Oh. You mean she's part of the frame?
A rather luscious frame, don't you think, to coin a phrase? Yes, I'm afraid you're in trouble, Mr. Troy. Real trouble.
Well, this was certainly cute. This was really cute. This was the tender trap. The more you struggle, the deeper you get into it. But this guy Regan, now here was an angle.
Yes, a rather delicate predicament, isn't it? Of course, I'd like to help you, Mr. Troy.
The lady sent you?
As a matter of fact, yes.
How come?
She has a proposition.
She had one before. Look where it got me.
This could be an answer to your problem. You see, I can tie up the police legally and demand your formal bail. Without Miss Varley's testimony, they have very little real evidence.
You ever watched Inspector Mellonby at work? He makes Dick Tracy look like an amateur.
Nevertheless, I can get you out of here.
And?
And naturally, we shall want a small favor in return.
How small?
From here, you are to go home and you are to make no phone calls. Tomorrow morning, you go to your office as usual, and you pay particular attention to the parcel mail when it arrives. There'll be a package for you. It'll be double wrapped.
Well, keep talking.
Undo the outer wrapping, and you will see a letter addressed to you. In it, there will be some instructions. You follow them, but you do not, I repeat, you do not open the inner package. It's been specially sealed, and we shall know immediately if it's been tampered with.
You're an untrusting lad, aren't you?
Mr. Troy, all you have to do is deliver that package. It's not a very difficult job. In return for doing that, I offer you your freedom.
I've got another suggestion, Mr. Regan.
Oh?
Why don't I just bop you one and make a quick exit?
I may not have seen Mellonby at work, but you have. How far do you think you'd get?
About a block and a half.
You see? My way, you've got nothing to lose, Mr. Troy.
Okay, so I go along with it. But just tell me one thing.
If I can.
Who really did kill that fellow Webster?
But you did, Mr. Troy. Ask Inspector Mellonby. He's positive you did.
Troy didn't kill that man. Oh, I know I've cursed that wretched Canadian troublemaker in my time, but I will say one thing in his favor. He's no killer.
But the evidence, sir.
What evidence? Look, a man lies dead on the floor with a bullet in him. The police surgeon maintains that he's been dead for 24 hours. Troy didn't even know a man called Webster existed 24 hours ago.
Well, I still don't think it was wise to let Troy go, Inspector.
Regan knew we couldn't hold him. We had to let him go. Incidentally, Troy's being shadowed.
Best team in the yard looking after him, sir.
Good. Troy's no fool, and I think he's purposely sticking his neck out.
You mean he may be setting himself up as a bait, sir?
Yes, the fool. When will he learn to stop poking his nose into police matters?
Well, this time he really didn't have any options, sir, did he?
What's behind all this? Anything from ballistics yet?
They're still working on the serial number. It's been burnt off with acid. They're putting it through photo analysis, but it takes time, unfortunately.
Yes, yes. Anything on the deceased yet?
Well, we know one thing. He has a criminal record. Spent a couple of years in Dartmoor. Worked an old confidence game. But that was 5 years ago. Not a thing since then.
Why was he killed? We get the answer to that and... Oh, to the devil with Troy. Why didn't he stay in Montreal?
What's the package, Pete?
Present from Santa Claus for being a good boy all year.
Pete?
Hmm?
I'm sorry about blabbing to the police. I had no idea.
That's okay, honey.
Well, I just wanted to help.
That's nice.
How is it you get yourself into so much trouble, Pete?
Trouble and me got married a long time ago, baby.
Will they arrest you again?
No.
How can you be so sure?
Because Mellonby knows I didn't kill Webster.
But
how... He was looking for a patsy, too. You got your notebook handy?
Yes.
Well, take this down. Troy, deliver the enclosed package to a Mr. Giles Nolan, Honeywick Cottage, Levendale.
Mm-hmm. Levendale? Where's that?
Buckinghamshire, about 40 miles from London.
Uh-huh. Deliver it today. Deliver it unopened. You're being watched.
Oh, Pete.
I make with the pencil, honey. You're being watched, and if you attempt to contact anyone else, there'll be trouble. Oh, that old word again. Don't allow yourself to be followed by plainclothesmen. And my angel, our anonymous letter writer, has enclosed 20 crisp little fibers.
They look real, too.
Oh, there's a postscript. No matter what happens, this package must reach Levendale.
Pete, I'm getting that old feeling again.
Yeah, it looks as though someone's going to try and stop me from getting this package to Mr. Nolan, doesn't it?
Well, let me ring through to Inspector Mellon.
Oh, no. You just put that copy of the letter into an envelope and send it to him express. Address to his home at Scotland Yard. Okay?
But it'd be so much easier to phone.
You're a sweet, innocent babe, and I love you like a brother.
I've got a brother.
You know something? I'll bet our phones are tapped this morning.
Oh, Pete, don't go.
Judy calls. See you.
Oh, men. Peter Troy Investigations.
Miss Banner?
Yes?
I gather Mr. Troy has left.
Who is this?
Never mind. Just don't make any phone calls today, Miss Summers. Otherwise, I'm afraid you'll never see your employer again.
What?
And don't answer the phone if it should ring.
But
and
I...
don't attempt to leave the office until 5:30 this evening. Stay just where you are.
But I have to go to the post, and I certainly...
Don't attempt to leave the office. You are being watched. Leave the post till tomorrow, or you won't live till tomorrow.
But Hello? Hello?
I couldn't care less who makes the delivery, Miss Valley, just so long as I get the stuff.
Oh, you'll get it, Mr. Nolan. No need to worry about that.
Yes, and what about Webster?
He had an unfortunate accident.
Yes, in other words, he was hijacked and killed. Sounds like Craig's work. Is Craig making the delivery, then?
Oh, no, that wouldn't be very smart, would it? Webster's men know Craig too well. They intercept him before he left London.
Well, then.
The delivery will be made by a rather dashing young Canadian private investigator called Peter Troy.
Private investigator?
Oh, don't worry, Mr. Nolan. He's completely trustworthy. He had to be. He's living very close to a noose at present.
And I've heard of Peter Troy. He's tough. He's very tough.
But of course, that's the whole idea. No one's going to hijack that messenger.
And what happens after he's made the delivery?
Now, what would you think?
Oh, I see.
Occupational hazard, Mr. Nolan.
He was going to do it.
You are.
No, wait a minute.
Because if you don't, Peter Troy will get you, Mr. Nolan, one way or another. I doubt very much whether he's in the sweetest temper just at present. As soon as he hands over the package to you, you give me the money, and then Mr. Troy dies.
Excuse me, sir. Are these seats taken?
Now, be my guest.
Nice weather for this time of year.
Isn't it, though?
Going far?
Oh, just as far as Levendale. Say, excuse me a minute, will you? I'd just like to get something from the rack above you.
Can I give you a hand?
No, thanks. I can manage. All I really want is this briefcase. Ah, oh, there we are. Just want to get something out of it. My gun, as a matter of fact.
Now, look.
I'm a very nervous sort of guy, so just don't make any sudden moves. Well, now, I guess you're a couple of Caroline Varley's little playmates, huh? Mr. Regan sent you?
Now, Troy.
Oh, you know my name. Well, that's neighborly. Now, just take off your neckties.
Our ties?
All the better to tie you up with.
Troy, we're police officers. I'm Sergeant Benson, and this is...
Don't make me laugh. You characters have been tailing me ever since I left my office this morning. Okay, get those ties off, or I'll have to do it the hard way.
Table in front of you.
I have to make a personal delivery, mister.
Put the package on the table.
Look, it's kind of dark in here. Okay. Don't I even get to see who you are?
You don't need to, Troy. You don't ever need to see anyone again.
I don't like the sound of that.
Don't turn around. Stay exactly as you are.
You know, when people say that to me, mister, I get nervous. I start looking around for something like this table.
All right, Troy. Come on out.
Give me a good reason. Not good enough, Buster.
He's got a gun.
So what? You've got him trapped.
Ah, the Lady Caroline. This figures.
Well, this is your last chance. Throw out that gun, Troy.
You want it? Come and get it.
What the devil?
Something came through the window.
Gas. Tear gas. Troy, this is Mellonby. You all right?
Yeah, but hold everything, Inspector.
Police. I have a cordon of men surrounding the place.
Well, keep them outside. I might be able to reason with this guy now.
Not a chance, Troy. I'll give you 2 minutes, and then we're coming in.
That ought to do it. All right, fella. You got no chance against the police. You may as well call it a day.
Give myself up. Not a chance.
Are you crazy? They've got us cold.
The lady's right, you know.
They'll never take me alive.
Watch it, Melamine. He's making a break for it.
You fool! Come back!
Find some other way, Inspector. In any case, how come you got to the scene of the nick-up?
Well, Troy...
You can thank your lucky stars you've got an efficient secretary.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you delivered a message,
Delivered the message? You don't know the trouble I had doing that little chore. I was being watched. I couldn't leave the office, nor could I use the phone.
Then,
But at 9:30 this morning, I had a visitor. Guess who?
You got me.
Our very irate landlord demanding the back rent. I gave him the letter and told him to take it straight round to Inspector Mellonby.
Okay, so you're a genius.
Troy, did you have any conception of what was in store for you?
Yeah, sort of. But I had to play it out. Otherwise, we're going to lose track of our playmates. It is dope, isn't it?
Heroin. There was enough of the pure stuff in that package to poison a herd of elephants. It was hijacked from the dead man, Webster. He had it smuggled in. Carol and her boyfriend decided to take it from him and make the delivery themselves.
And the difficulty was getting it to Nolan.
Webster's boys knew Carol's boyfriend. The delivery had to be made by a stranger.
Enter Troy. Well, I'm glad I was ready for the ambush.
And in future, Troy, please try to refrain from tying up my police officers in trains. They don't appreciate it.
They really were your men?
They were.
You heard what the man said.
Hmm?
Walk softly, Peter Troy.
Are you sure that'll be all, sir?
Yes, thank you, Gilpin. I shan't want anything more. By the way, how's your wife? Is she recovering from the operation?
Well, I'm happy to say there's progress, but it will be a long job, sir.
Yes, Yeah. Buy her something with this. Cheer her up.
Oh, thank you, sir. You're most kind. I do appreciate it.
Oh, that's all right. I hope things go well for you. Good night, Gilpin.
Good night, sir.
No use putting it off any longer.
Present the stories of Sherlock Holmes.
A matter of conscience.
James Beresford's death by his own hand shocked the London business world.
The rumors had been well-founded. Never smoke without fire, the financiers said over their whiskies and sodas. Beresford's notes had been going about the city at 40% discount, and there were no takers. Settling day was the very next day. He realized he was a completely ruined man, and so he took the only way out.
James Beresford, the man who shot himself yesterday. He at least did not leave a wife and family.
No, quite. Poor devil. I know the man was a gambler and probably wrecked a great deal of havoc through his ruthlessness in business, but I can't help feeling sorry for him. He must have been in a desperate state of mind.
Indeed, yes. I met the gentleman on more than one occasion through my brother Mycroft in the Diogenes Club. He was on the surface a most amiable and fair-minded man. He was well-liked by many and feared by most. A man like Beresford makes many enemies in the course of a lifetime.
Well, you mean that his enemies may have brought about his ruin?
Oh, undoubtedly. The point is that in order to outmaneuver his kind, one has to be within the inner circle, as it were.
Well, I don't think I follow that, Holmes.
Well, I mean only someone near to him, someone who held his confidence, would be able to trick him so cleverly that it would lead to total bankruptcy.
But you think he was driven to this by the treachery of his friends?
Oh, almost certainly. That may appear cynical of me, and I doubt if we shall ever learn the truth, but I should judge it to be so.
How dreadful that any man can be betrayed to that extent.
Quite. It is inhuman and immoral. But not a criminal matter, for no one has broken any laws. One can cheat a man quite legally by giving him false advice. If I sway your judgment to back a horse that has no chance of winning, well, whose fault is that?
Yes, well, I see what you mean. But if Beresford was forced to kill himself by someone else, I wouldn't like to have that person's conscience.
Ah, yes. A matter of conscience. Yes, that is a different matter. Ah, we have a visitor. I wonder who that can be so early on a cold November's morning.
Now, if it's anybody important, you've no need to fear of my presence. I've sadly neglected my patients due to this flu epidemic, and I must be about my business.
Oh, no, please don't go. I value your opinions. They give me the slant of the ordinary man in the street.
Oh, excuse me. A young lady to see you, Mr. Holmes. Refuses to give her name, and apparently she ain't got no car.
Well, her business must be urgent to ignore the weather and the social niceties. Show her in, Mrs. Hudson.
Oh, very well. This way, please. Thank you.
Do come in. May I introduce myself? I am Sherlock Holmes, and this is my friend and colleague, Dr. Watson.
How do you do?
I know who you are. I have often seen you, Mr. Holmes.
Do come nearer the fire. Take a seat. Some coffee?
No, thank you. I cannot stop. And you will possibly ask me to leave anyway. You see, I want some advice. But I'm not prepared to give you my name or address.
That is at least honest. You could have lied about those facts and hoped to get away with it.
I don't lie. I always tell the truth. I want you to advise me on the correct course of punishing a man who has forced another man to commit suicide.
Ah, this is a most curious request. Something which is both pertinent and topical. I take it that you're referring to the death of Mr. James Beresford.
How did you guess that?
It's really not at all hard. The case is splashed all over the newspapers. Watson and I were discussing the tragedy and the poor fellow's state of mind just before you called.
Suicide while the balance of his mind was disturbed. That what you think? Nonsense. He was driven to it by Max Corbett.
Max Corbett. Yes, they started as partners, is that not so? Very many years ago. An enterprise known as International Supplies. Very ambitious and very successful.
It was all James Beresford's skill and business acumen. But Corbett and his cronies got to know more. They deceived him in various different ways under different names. Beresford trusted them. He was unaware, even up to the last 6 months, of the bitterness and hatred he was faced with. Can you believe it?
Oh, yes. Please continue. You're telling me very little that I didn't know.
Beresford was forced in the end to turn to moneylenders, only to find that they also were puppets of Max Corbett's men. Then came the final squeeze. It was cold-blooded and calculated. And at the moment, these men are pretending to be heartbroken, but they are inwardly delighted. They should be punished. They must be punished. Particularly Max Corbett. Do you not agree with me, Mr. Holmes?
My dear young lady, as I pointed out to Watson only a short while ago, this cannot be regarded as a criminal matter. Everything you say may be true. You may even be able to produce certain facts as proof, but there is no way that you're going to pin a crime onto Max Corbett. If you start to spread these rumors, you can lay yourself open to an action for slander. But Corbett is too clever to be caught like that.
You mean that my hands are tied? That there is nothing I or anyone else can do?
I didn't say that. I shall have to give the matter some thought. I wonder... Watson, while you're doing your rounds, will you be anywhere within the vicinity of the Diogenes Club?
I can be, Holmes, yes.
Then would you be good enough to deliver a note to my brother Mycroft? He's bound to be there around lunchtime. Excuse me a moment. Paper and pen. Envelope. Yes.
Mr. Holmes, it is quite clear that my worst fears have been confirmed. I am doing no good here, merely wasting your time. I'd better leave.
Yeah, no. Please don't go. There you are, Watson. Now, if you could see that this is delivered as soon as possible.
Very well, I shall do my best. Oh, will you excuse me now? I'm a doctor and have to attend to patients. I shall call back later, Holmes. Good morning to you.
Now, young lady, answer me one thing. If I agree to help you, you will give me your name and address here and now?
I got to the Diogenes Club just before lunch and left Holmes's note for his brother. The place seemed unusually crowded. I met a few people I knew who invited me for a drink. And it being a cold day, I accepted gratefully. It was while in one of the rooms that I heard the name Max Corbett mentioned.
Ah, Max. Max Corbett. Might have known that you'd be here today. Toasting to success.
I don't know what you mean, Wilder. I came to collect some mail. And now I'm off to see my fiancée. That's worth a toast.
Ah, yes, the Honorable Abigail Stratton. Yes, I read of your engagement. Congratulations.
Thank you. But today is not a happy one. Not after hearing of poor Beresford shooting himself.
Poor Beresford, indeed. Cut out the rot, Max. I happen to have been on the right side when international supplies went under, so I'm not complaining. But I'm not a fool. You and I and the rest of the crowd caused it to happen.
That's a lie.
It's true when you know it. You put Beresford out of the game as surely as if you pulled the trigger of that revolver yourself. You played every dirty trick you could to beat him. I've got to hand it to you. You got what you wanted. Mind you, what Abigail Stratton would think. Well, lucky for you, she doesn't understand business deals.
Now, you keep Abigail out of this.
Oh, it doesn't matter to me. She's your problem. I wonder how you'll explain it all. Tell me something, Max. Were you... very afraid of him?
Afraid of him? Afraid of Beresford? No, of course not. Not in the slightest.
Well, I'd say you were scared stiff. That's why you couldn't fight straight. You've made a fortune out of him, but you had to do it crookedly. James Beresford was a gambler, but a fair one. Something you'll never be, a fair fighter.
Now, that's enough, Wilder. I'm not staying here to listen to this. And you'd better watch your step. You're right when you say I have influence now, more than I'd ever had. So be careful.
You can't frighten me, Max. I've taken all precautions.
Excuse me, Mr. Corbett. You called for your mail, but this one must have been overlooked. It was at the desk. How he got there, I can't say. Must have just arrived by hand.
Oh. Well, thank you. Excuse me, Walter. That's strange. Handwriting, it looks like...
Well, go on. Open it up then, old boy. Might be important.
We can't end it like this. You cannot get rid of me. I shall always be near. I will call upon you at your home in Eaton Square next Thursday evening, exact at 9 o'clock. You will see me. You cannot avoid it. Jimmy.
Oh, what the devil? What's up, Max? You look as though you've seen a ghost. Not bad news, I hope. Something frightened you. Again? What is it this time? Something real or something imaginary? Or is it the fact that you have a guilty conscience?
The next few days were very busy ones for me. I was either out in the cold, misty London streets visiting sick patients or attending to them in my surgery. I hardly saw Holmes, and when I did, he was usually coming in or going out of 221B Baker Street, so muffled up that I could scarcely recognize him. Then, about 2 days after the inquest on the death of James Beresford, we had a caller. The morning was a foggy one. Gas lamps burned in the streets long after daylight. It was surprisingly cold, and Mrs. Hudson arrived later than usual. She was not pleased to receive a visitor in these circumstances.
Oh, now, what on earth?
Oh, it's going to be one of those days.
Yes?
I want to see Sherlock Holmes, Martha.
I'm not so sure that you can. Have you an appointment?
No, but it's early. He must be at home. There's the business still in bed.
Mr. Holmes is always up early, but he doesn't like to be disturbed at this hour. Now, if you give me...
No, look here. That's enough. Let me in. I didn't come all this way to argue with a common washerwoman on a doorstep.
Common washerwoman, indeed.
The rooms are upstairs. Very well, I'll find my own way.
You can't charge him like this, sir. He wants to know who you are and what your business is. It's my job to look after him and see that he isn't put upon by the likes of people like you.
Come here, quiet.
Yes, what is it?
This man pushed his way in, sir, and he demands to see you. Mr. Holmes, I couldn't keep him out.
But that's all right. Thank you, Mrs. Hudson. You may come back to clear breakfast in 10 minutes.
Common washerwoman, indeed.
Come in, Mr. Corbett. Take a seat. You know Dr. Watson?
How do you do? No, I don't know Watson, but I'm glad to see you remember me, Holmes. We've met a couple of times at the club, haven't we?
That is correct. May I ask the purpose of this surprise visit? Oh, it's all right. You may speak freely in front of my friend. I have no secrets from him. Well?
I'm being persecuted, and I want you to put a stop to it.
Persecuted? You mean someone is threatening you? You're in bodily danger in some way? A threat to your well-being? Then why not go to the police?
Oh, no. There's nothing tangible for the police to get their teeth into. It's far too subtle. And the fact is that since my good friend and ex-partner James Beresford killed himself, someone's been... Well, persecuting me. I've received a note. Here, I'll show it to you. It was delivered at the club. It's a stupid joke, of course, someone with a perverted sense of humour. It's written, as you can see, as though it came from Jimmy Beresford. The handwriting is the same.
My dear Corbett, if you know this is just a malicious trick, am I not to burn it and forget the whole matter?
Because it won't stop there. It hasn't. I'm being watched, followed. I know I am. And I've seen him. Not once or twice, but several times.
Seen him? Seen whom?
Well, someone, disguised as Jimmy. Okay, coming out of the fog. Why, only yesterday I banged into him. I could have sworn it actually was him. Tall, big, dressed in the way that Jimmy always dressed. Even the same cigars, the smell. The fact is that someone's trying to scare me, break my concentration.
If that was the objective, it certainly succeeded. You seem very distraught.
Well, it's getting on my nerves. Well, of course it is. I'm too busy a man to be bothered by such petty things. I'm going to get married soon. This going on a moment longer. You've got to stop it, Holmes.
I fail to see quite what I can do.
Well, cash, whoever it is behind all this. I'll pay you any amount of money you want. Now, look, today is Tuesday. And in that blasted note, it says that whoever it is going to call on me at 9 o'clock on Thursday.
Well?
Well, here's your chance. You've got 2 days. Now, catch whoever it is that's tormenting me. Arrest him. Hunt him out. Scare the living daylights out of him. Warn him that if this persecution continues, he'll be dealt with. I don't quite know what methods you can use. I don't care. Just tell me how much you want to offer me complete protection.
Mr. Corbett, I'm a private detective. I only deal in very important criminal matters. I am not a bodyguard. And cases like this are of no interest to me whatsoever.
You mean you won't take the case?
May I clear now, sir?
I do not consider that there is a case, Corbett. Yes, Mrs. Hudson, you may take away the breakfast things and see this gentleman to his carriage.
Oh, very well. But you'll be sorry for all this. And I don't need that creature to show me out. Goodbye.
We've had some ill-mannered people in these here rooms, Mr. Holmes, but he must rate as the worst chink. Novi Reach, that's what the French should call him.
I am inclined to agree, but forget it, Mrs. Holmes.
But he'd call me a common washerwoman and a creature.
It really doesn't matter.
That's all very well. But people in glass houses shouldn't try to put the straw that breaks the camel's back through the eye of an eagle.
A plethora of mixed metaphors, Mrs. Hudson, but you made your point.
After Max Corbett left, Holmes was strangely silent. He returned to his seat by the fire and relit his pipe. He knew far more than he'd told me, and wasn't going to tell me more. I packed my things and prepared to leave on my daily rounds. As I put on my overcoat and gloves, he said...
You will be free this evening, won't you, Watson?
No, I have no appointments, but I doubt if I should be home before 7.
Oh, that's all right. Ample time to get over to Eaton Square by 9.
Ah, where Corbett lives. Where to pay a call upon him?
That's right. Although I'm quite sure he will have another unexpected visitor before then, but we must be ready for all emergencies.
A young lady to see you, sir. Her card.
Hmm? Oh, thank you. Miss Gillian Marsh, secretary to Mr. James Beresford. Hmm. What's the time here?
8 o'clock, Mr. Corbett.
Oh, all right. Show in.
Very good, sir. This way, please, miss.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Corbett.
Good evening.
I don't think we've met. I was Mr. Beresford's secretary. I have called because I wanted to know if you could help me. Have you any similar work for me to do? I'm very experienced in your type of business, and I'm now unemployed. I'd be grateful for some help.
Well, sit down, Miss Marsh. This seems a most odd time for you to call. Hardly business hours. But let's not bother about that. You see, you worked for Jimmy Beresford. I never saw you in his office.
I worked for him at his home. I was a private secretary.
I see. Then you must know all his correspondence. Tell me, Miss Marsh, have you ever seen this note before?
James Beresford's writing. Shall see you Eaton Square. Call on Tuesday evening. Exactly at 9.
What? What's that? Tuesday evening? No. It says Thursday evening.
Oh, no. No, you're mistaken. I know this writing. It's Tuesday.
But that's today. I made all the preparations for Thursday. I'm going to Paris that morning. It can't be Tuesday. It can't be. It's 8 o'clock.
And Jimmy will be here within the hour. I'll leave you to face him, Mr. Corbett.
No, don't go. Please don't. I have to think. You see, I've been having the strangest hallucinations. I've been seeing Beresford ever since he died. He's been standing on street corners at the club, getting out of carriages, just standing there, haunting me. And now he's supposed to be coming here within the hour. Are you sure that note says Tuesday?
Of course. Look for yourself. How odd. Of course, even the signature could be misinterpreted. Instead of Jimmy, it could be Jilly. Oh, I'd analyzed that before.
Before? You mean you've seen this note before? Now, tell me. Tell me all about it. I pay you well. Anything you can do to put my mind at rest. Just prove this is a stupid, malicious joke and set my mind at rest. Please help me.
You really are frightened, aren't you? Frightened that the doorbell will ring, and through that door will walk the ghost of James Beresford to torment your soul. Well, all right. I'll set your crooked little mind at rest. No one will be coming here.
Ah, how do you know?
Because I wrote that note. I wrote it after he died. You see, I wasn't his secretary. I am his niece. Uncle Jimmy was one of the best. You had him hunted down, and you were glad when he was killed. Well, I wanted to make you suffer as he must have suffered. I could imitate Uncle's handwriting. I did it because I wanted to see what kind of a man you were. I've proved it. You are a cheap coward.
Oh, is that so? Indeed. Well, don't think that a chit of a girl like you is going to show me up. You think you've taught me a lesson? Well, I'll teach you now, here and now. I'll show you to start with.
Oh, how dare you! Oh, how dare you! Stop! Just stop it!
Oh, just show me up, will you? You little vixen over here, how's this?
Oh, right, that's enough, Corbett. Leave her alone. Watson, take care of him.
Come on. Come on, who do you want me to deal with?
You all right, Miss Marsh?
Yes. Yes, I'm all right.
Maximilian! Just what does all this mean?
Abigail. Well, how did you... Why are you here?
I was asked by Mr. Sherlock Holmes to come here this evening. He said I would learn something to my advantage. I seem to have done so. I'm leaving. I have nothing to say to you now... And I shall have nothing to say to you in the future.
But I can explain all this. I can explain. It's a trick.
Perhaps, Miss Stratton, you would like to take this note. It will explain that what you have seen was premeditated. Max always plans everything, down to the last detail.
Thank you. I'm grateful I found out the worst before it's too late. Good night, gentlemen. Goodbye, Maximilian.
It wasn't until we were back at Baker Street... that Holmes confessed his part in the unmasking of Max Corbett. He puffed at his pipe with satisfaction.
You see, I agreed with Gillian Marsh. Something should be done to curb this man's ambitions. So I plotted with her to show up the weaker side of his nature. I even impersonated James Beresford. I'm quite good at disguises, you know, and could well remember how the man looked and walked. Then, when we had preyed upon his mind long enough, we brought things to a climax, making sure that his fiancée, Abigail Stratton, saw what kind of a man he really was. Now, rumours will spread after this. I should think it will be many long days before he dares show his face at the Diogenes Club, for instance. Hardly a criminal case, I agree, but one where I think justice has been done. Don't you agree, Watson?
Oh, yes, very clever, although perhaps not entirely ethical.
Well, the man is defeated. In a much more gracious manner than he has defeated many others. My conscience is quite clear.
Listen again next Sunday to The Stories of Sherlock Holmes, with Graham Armitage as Holmes and Kerry Jordan as Dr. Watson.
Yukon 28209. Yes, this is Candy Matson.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Candy Matson, Yukon 28209. This is the start of a mystery. Our main character is a San Francisco girl detective, Candy Matson. There are others in the show, too. An Inspector Mallard, a gent who calls himself Rembrandt Watson, a cowboy, a dude ranch owner, and a gal the casting agency assured us was a dowager, slightly boozy. There are a few other voices along the way, too. I think that has all the makings of a good mystery show, don't you? Well, let's go on from here and find out. So, here's Candy Matson.
Like the man just said, this is the start of a mystery. Christmas had me completely tuckered out. No one had invited me to the Rose Bowl game or the East-West at Keysar, so I decided to make like a bear and hibernate over New Year's. It worked out perfectly because, as my old friend Rembrandt Watson put it...
You wish to greet 1950 in some remote spot? Is that the idea, Dove?
That's the idea, Ducky.
I have the perfect place for you. A dude ranch, reasonable... just on the other side of Sonoma, in the Valley of the Moon.
Valley of the Moon. New Year's Eve in the Valley of the Moon. Rembrandt, that sends me.
Good. Maybe it can send us both. I have a commission to take some pictures up there for a brochure they're putting out. I have to be there tomorrow afternoon.
Yes.
I see you're nibbling at the bait. I shall be blunt. Why don't you drive me up?
You've won your point. I'll pick you up tomorrow at what time?
Let us be spectacular and say high noon.
High noon.
And do bring some cash, will you, girl? I'm a little short.
I thought you were going up there on a commission.
Yes, I am. But they have some simply divine one-arm devices.
And?
And there goes me commission.
Naturally, a girl has to look right to welcome in the New Year. That gave me the perfect excuse to squander a few hard-earned dollars and cents on some lovely clothes that didn't make sense but cost dollars. The afternoon was aging gracefully, a little gray here and a wrinkle or two there. So I stopped for a parfait, very dry and no olives. With that mission accomplished, I headed back over Kearney Street. And as I wheeled past Portsmouth Square and the Hall of Justice, I realized I hadn't seen my chum Mallard in quite some time. Inspector Ray Mallard of San Francisco Homicide. A very smart cop who can smell a clue a mile away. But when it comes to me, he very conveniently carries his own fog around.
Well, Candy, my little cupcake.
Mallard, dear, you called me your little cupcake.
Sure, it's still the Christmas season. Let's be charitable, I always say. What do you always say?
In a situation like this, nothing. I just exude a stream of steam from the top of my head.
Very cute. What brings you around our boarding house?
You, darn it. I thought you might like to know I'm going away for a week.
What did they get you on? Petty theft?
Yeah, and they got me as I tried to make my getaway on a tricycle. But for your information, Inspector, I'm spending my New Year's Eve up in the Valley of the Moon.
Oh, want to get away from it all, huh?
That's right. You in particular.
In that case, may I get you a midwinter vacation off to a flying start?
You can try. How?
I'm not working tonight. How's about a movie?
You've got yourself a date. What's playing?
Tex Acuff.
That's what I thought. Where's Tex and his faithful horse Mustard playing this time?
Why, at the Plaza.
Mm.
And the pictures of Pip, too.
I'll bet.
I read all about it.
Yeah.
Hot lead over Laredo.
Ugh.
Look, here's the ad in the paper.
Oh, I can't wait to see it. Show me.
There. A searing epic of the West's wild grandeur. Men as rugged as the mountains.
Whee.
A singing saga of scorching bullets, strumming guitars, and supple senoritas. And starring the champ of the cowboys,
Tex Acuff.
Now, what more can one ask in a motion picture?
Popcorn.
Oh, we'll have that, too.
I went home, did some packing for the trip the next day, fixed something to eat, and then changed into my spurs that jingle-jangle for Tex Acuff. Mallard arrived, we took off. We got to the early show, so we managed to get some good seats. Of course, he wasn't kidding about the popcorn. He got a great big bag of that. We fumbled our way down the darkened aisle and found a place to sit. The movie was almost over.
Oh, Tex, the whole thing looks like a gosh dang frame-up to me.
They must have snuck off with them head of cattle and old-ring the in-yule.
Yep, I reckon.
Here, Candy, these seats are okay.
Oh. They must have gone that way, all right.
Sorry, lady.
So am I, Pete.
What happened to Tess? Last time I seen her, she was leaving the schoolhouse to
start. Have some popcorn.
You ain't heard from her, Tess?
No.
I wonder where the sheriff is. He said he was going to be riding by directly.
Oh, probably.
What?
I said sure is good popcorn.
Oh,
sure you don't want some?
Hmm? What?
I said, are you sure you don't want some popcorn?
I keep saying no. No, thank you. I don't want any popcorn, my dear.
If you'll pardon me, I'm going home and catch this on television.
Like seeing, not with Tess missing this way.
I understand your feeling on the matter, Tex.
After Hot Lead Over Laredo, I suffered through six reels of a bouncy college picture. Freshmen looked like holdovers from the early days of the war. Then a newsreel, then a cartoon, then the trailer, then again Tex Acuff. So we got out about midnight, and I drove Mallard back to the Hall of Justice. As he got out of the car...
Oh, well.
Oh, now that's what I call sharp dialogue. On leaving the lady, all he can say is, well.
Oh, nothing personal, Candy.
Now he laughed at me.
Well, I was just thinking. You're going up to the Valley of the Moon for a rest. Is that the idea?
Well, yes. That and trying to get away from Tex Acuff.
I know you too well, Candy. You're not going to have any rest. Look at the headline on that paper in the newsstand there. Man missing in Sonoma mystery.
And Sonoma can have it. Mallard, dear, if I so much as step inside the Sonoma city limits, you can come and lead me away quietly.
You know something? I'm going to remember that.
Mallard waved goodbye and went inside. I didn't like the way he said that. But I had other things to think about, such as getting home and getting some sleep. So I did. And in the morning, I drove over to California Street, picked up Rembrandt, and we headed out across the Golden Gate Bridge up towards Sonoma. The Valley of the Moon wasn't too far, a couple of hours of leisurely driving with time out for readjustment, and you're there. Then another 8 miles north and east, and there was the Dude Ranch.
This is it, dear. What do you think of it?
Perfect, just perfect. Why, Rembrandt, dear, it's a real ranch.
Of course, Dove, a going concern. They only take in guests as a sideline. Oh, here comes a man. I imagine that's Mr. Lawrence, the owner.
Oh, well, I'll shut off the motor.
Good morning.
How do you do, sir? Would you be Mr. Lawrence, perchance?
Yes, and you?
Watson, Rembrandt Watson. I'm here to take some pictures for you as we discussed via the Bell system.
Oh, yes, Watson, right on time. That's good.
Oh, Candy, may I present Mr. Lawrence, owner of the Double L, Miss Matson.
How do you do?
Miss Matson was wondering if she could get accommodations for about a week, Mr. Lawrence.
What? Now, wait a minute, Watson. I'm paying you a substantial fee for this job, and I won't get stuck with non-paying guests.
Oh, I think you're laboring under a misapprehension.
Hold it, Rembrandt. Look, Mr. Lawrence, I'm here as a commercial guest. I'm not asking for any favors. And I doubt if I'd stay here now if you got down on your bended knuckles.
Oh, now, wait a second. I didn't mean it just that way. I apologize. It's only that, I've had some tough luck with people lately who seem to be only too intent on beating me out of their bills. Please, Miss Matson, excuse me. I just jumped to conclusions, that's all.
I think you set a new record for the jump.
Oh, forget it, Dove. Do.
Okay, I'm sorry. Do you have room for me, Mr. Lawrence?
Why, yes, of course. A delightful cabin just in back of the ranch house. Not being prepared, it'll take about an hour to get it in shape. Will that be all right?
Yes, sure. We can eat in the meantime.
Fine. I'll get one of the boys to fetch your luggage. Oh, you can park over there under the old stables.
Oh, no garage?
Again, I have to apologize, Miss Matson. The garage is overloaded now. We have a sheriff's posse up here. The owner of the ranch next to mine disappeared yesterday afternoon. The sheriff is searching the entire vicinity around here.
Dove, are you all right? Well, speak to me, girl. What is it?
I'm all right. I just happened to think of something Mallard once said last night. I pushed my assembled horsepower into the stables where they belonged, and Rembrandt took me by the arm and steered me into the ranch house. It was a beautiful place. A tall, cathedral-like living room with a crackling fireplace about the size of Dante's Inferno at one end. Off to this one side of the fireplace was a cozy little bar. The sun was just going over the yardarm, so I figured an old-fashioned would be quite in order. Old-fashioned was right. Behind the bar was the personification of an old-fashioned cowboy. Real chaps, a leathery face, and little squint wrinkles around his eyes. Well, howdy, Tex. It seems like as if I done saw you in a movie last night.
Howdy yourself, ma'am. Nope. Must have been two other cowboys. I've been working here at the Double L for almost 5 years.
My mistake, partner. Matson's the handle. What's yourn?
Is that the way cowboys talk, ma'am?
Yeah, Hollywood and Vine variety. I'm glad to know you.
Call me Jeff, Miss Matson.
Check. This is Rembrandt Watson. Rembrandt, Jeff.
Are those shoulders sewn in, or are they real?
I'm afraid they're real. Hiya, Mr. Watson.
You riding herd on all those bottles back there, Jeff?
Yep, for better or worse. Chang, our regular bartender, took a powder on us day before yesterday.
Uh-oh. Seems like he picked a bad time to do a runout.
Oh, you mean the missing gent from Glen Valley.
Glen Valley?
Yeah, that's the ranch next to ours. Yeah, I understand the police are on the lookout for Chang, but he didn't do it. He's a good, honest Chinese boy.
Even so, it's a bad time to disappear.
Oh, I admit it doesn't sound good. Well, you folks won't mind the efforts of an amateur dispenser. What can I do for you?
An old-fashioned for me, Jeff.
Well, that I can try.
From now on, it gets easier. Rembrandt only wants a Coke.
Well, I can sure fix that all right. Uh-oh.
What's wrong?
Here comes the Duchess.
The Duchess?
Yeah, one of our guests. Oh. She's been out here about 2 weeks. And she can go through distilled spirits faster than a buzzsaw through mushy pine. And I hope you're prepared to talk.
Always, Jeff. Always.
Hello, my dear. You just arrived, haven't you?
Mentally or physically?
Oh, my! A sense of humor, too. I shall enjoy your company. Are you staying long?
Well, I'm not sure now. My plans are rather indefinite.
Oh, you'll love it here, Miss...
And may I present Mr. Rembrandt Watson?
Charmed, I'm sure.
As of now, me life has commenced.
Oh, you delightful lad. Jeff, dear boy, make me just a little nip of the old favorite, will you?
Sure. One painkiller coming up. Ah, here's your old-fashioned, Miss Matson.
Thanks.
Mr. Watson, your coat.
Thanks, sir.
Young lady, you must be an actress. You look like one.
Well, no, I'm not.
I used to be an actress, a famous one. I toured all over the continent with the greatest of stars, the finest of plays. I was the toast of London, Berlin, Vienna.
Yes, but
I had kings and princes worshipping at my feet.
Oh.
I was once the vortex of an international incident. But no matter. Those days are gone forever now.
And here's your tonic, Duchess.
What? Oh, thank you, Jeff. Well, as we used to say, here's to crime.
What was that?
It's a perfect toast. We have quite a mystery in this part of the country, young lady.
And so I keep hearing.
I can't understand. Mr. Ferguson had everything to live for.
Mr. Ferguson?
The man who owned Glen Valley. Wealthy, good-looking, in the best of health.
You seem to know quite a bit about the gentleman, Duchess.
Only what I read in the newspapers, and I can't understand it. Well, as I said, here's to crime.
We dallied at the bar for a few more moments. Then Jeff informed me that lunch was ready and Rembrandt and I ate. We managed to duck the Duchess. I don't think I could have taken her with food. After lunch, Lawrence showed me to my cabin. It was, as he said, delightful, with a warming flame in the fireplace. It was cheery and comfy, and I felt completely at home. Lawrence left to talk to Rembrandt. They were going to discuss the pictures he wanted taken. I felt like going riding, so I changed into my jeans and started to leave. But as I did...
Oh, sorry, Miss Matson. I didn't mean to frighten you.
Oh, well, you did, Joe.
I was just about to knock when you opened the door.
Oh, that's okay. Was there something you wanted?
Well, you're in riding clothes, and that answers my question.
The question being?
Well, were you going riding? You see, the boss wanted to know if you were going riding, and if so, did you want some company? I usually show the guests around the acres.
Well, yes, that'd be wonderful.
And how long do you want to be out, Miss Matson?
About 3 hours or so.
Sure. In that case, we'll take the deluxe tour over across the back 60 and up through Manzanita Canyon. You know, when we get up to the top of Iron Mountain, you can see the whole valley of the moon.
That's for me, Jeff. Let's hit the leather. Jeff was obviously born to the saddle and came into this world teething on a tether rein. You couldn't tell where the horse left off, and Jeff began, a real rider. We nosed out through the clump of ranch buildings and on into open space. I had a fine horse under me, and I really felt like I was living. We'd been riding about an hour when we came across a little stream. Jeff indicated we should stop and water the horses. How long have you been a cowboy, Jeff?
Oh, about as long as I can remember.
Around here?
No, up around Montana. Then little by little, I gradually drifted further west. Hit upon the Valley of the Moon about 5 years ago, fell in love with it. I've been here ever since. Reckon I'll stay here, too.
No, I don't blame you. Excuse me if I seem to be full of questions, Jeff.
Well, that's what I'm here for, ma'am.
Good. Because I've got a couple more. What's up that little draw there on the other side of the creek?
Nothing but a tangle of manzanita, scrub oak and brush.
Pretty hard to get through there, hmm?
Hard? It's impossible. Well, I've seen chipmunks get fouled up in that draw.
Uh-huh. Then how come those boot prints are going right up there?
Boot prints? I don't see any. Well, hey, you're right.
Either boot prints are the result of shoes with Cuban heels.
Well, now, there's a strange one.
Exactly what I thought, too.
Say, you know, something just dawned on me. Matson, didn't I see your pictures in the Frisco papers a couple of weeks back?
San Francisco.
Beg pardon?
San Francisco.
Oh, yeah, San Francisco. Excuse me. Oh, sure. You know, the way you was asking those questions just now, it hit me. You're a detective.
I'm afraid you got me, partner.
Uh-oh, wait a minute, Miss Matson. Listen.
Let's duck, Jeff.
Too late now.
What the... Well, hold there. What are you doing over this way, Jeff?
Hi, boss. Well, sir, you give us quite a little start.
You haven't answered my question.
Oh, we just stopped to water the horses, Mr. Lawrence. Miss Matson here is a mighty fine rider. She wanted to make the big circle of the ranch.
Well, you certainly picked a fine time to do it. Whoa. Sheriff Posse is out around this way. You're liable to get shot. Now get back to the ranch, pronto.
Just a moment, Mr. Lawrence. You've been uncivil ever since I got here, and I don't like to be dictated to.
It's like being on board ship, Miss Matson. The captain is the law. I'm the owner of this property, and you'll do as I say. Now get moving, both of you. And if you don't like my attitude, you can leave any time you want.
Leave? Now?
Yes.
Oh, no, Mr. Lawrence. I'm beginning to find your ranch extremely interesting. Jeff and I wheeled our horses about and sifted back to the ranch house. I looked back a couple of times, but there was no sign of Lawrence. I was mad, and Jeff must have sensed it because he was smart enough to keep his mouth closed. As I dismounted at the stables and headed for the house, he waved me a forlorn adios and disappeared. Just as I went through the door, I was greeted by Rembrandt.
Oh, there you are, Dove. I was about to institute a searching party for you.
Oh, I was safe enough until I gained the grips with a thing called my own temper. What have you been doing, Ducky?
I've had a most delightful afternoon, Candy dear. I've been playing canasta with the Duchess.
canasta. Ooh, you don't know how to play canasta.
Well, I know that, and you know it, but I don't think the Duchess does. She celebrated each hand with a hefty pull on her bitters.
Why'd you manage to make any sense out of the game?
That has me puzzled, too. All I'd do is put down some cards, any cards, and she'd congratulate me.
Maybe you've got a green thumb for the game. Incidentally, I thought you were going to be taking pictures this afternoon.
Called off on account of the law.
Hmm?
Mr. Lawrence had to ride out into the lone prairie and deliver a phone message to the sheriff. He's making like ghost riders in the sky out there. Do go and change, dear. You smell of horses.
Yes, I know.
Oh, and incidentally, we're to have a soiree this evening. Two more guests arrived. The cook tells me there's to be a little entertainment after dinner.
Good. Around here, anything will be an improvement. I didn't tell Rembrandt I was going to change, so it wasn't a fib when I stayed in my jeans. I went back to the stables, got the boy to rig me another horse, and headed out toward that creek again. I rode faster this time, because I'd noticed something else there besides the footprints. It was a battered 10-gallon hat on the far side of the creek with studded initials JF on the crown. But when I got there, the cupboard was bare, but good. Not only was the 10-gallon hat gone, but the boot prints had been completely obliterated. I stayed for another few minutes of study and frustration and then went back to the ranch. I changed, met Rembrandt, had dinner, and then we relaxed in the living room.
Oh, Dove, I'm so full. This outdoor living makes me ravenous.
Outdoors? I don't think you've stepped out of this building since we got here.
Well, then it's the thought of outdoor living that does it. Oh, there are the new arrivals over by the fire.
Did you meet them?
No. They looked at me as though I might soil their escutcheon, whatever that is.
I can see what you mean.
Hi, folks. Do you enjoy your dinner?
Oh, hello, Jeff. Yes, it was wonderful.
Has anybody seen Mr. Lawrence or the Duchess?
We haven't seen Lawrence, no. The Duchess is over there writing a letter.
Oh. Well, I hope you'll all drop around in about an hour. I'm going to do some singing and a little guitar plucking.
Is there anything you don't do, Jeff?
No, very little. But none of them too darn good either.
Sure, we'll be here, won't we, Rembrandt?
What? Oh, yes, I go with three diamonds and a joker.
Jeff left. Rembrandt snoozed, and I threw a wrap around my shoulders and took a stroll around the patio. The air felt good. I went over to my cabin, picked up some cigarettes, and started back. But as I came close to the cabin opposite mine...
Oh.
It was the Duchess. I'd recognize those tones and groans anywhere.
Oh.
Duchess?
Yes?
This is Candy Matson. Are you all right?
Oh, yes, I'm all right. Touch of indigestion, I should imagine.
Oh, is there anything I can do? Can I get you something?
Oh, what a dear thing you are. No, I'll be all right. I have these attacks all the time. Run along and enjoy yourself. Jeff is going to sing. Such a dear boy.
But you're sure you'll be okay?
Yes. Yes, dear. You'll go along.
Oh, here. Now, let me put a blanket over you.
Oh.
Here, and take off your shoes. You'll be ever so much more comfortable.
You're so sweet. So pretty. You remind me of myself when I was young. Thank you. Thank you so much.
I tucked the old girl in and left her to dreams of the past and went back to the ranch house. Jeff was just pulling up a chair in front of the fireplace.
Well, you'll have to understand, folks, I'm not a singer. I don't pretend to be. I just warble along the way I feel. Now, is there any particular kind of cowboy tune you'd like to hear?
No, Jeff. Why don't you just sing a favorite of yours?
Good idea. Just do what comes naturally.
Okay, you ask for it. Let's see. Here's one I think you might like. Oh, bury me not on the lone prairie where the coyotes howl and the wind blows free in a narrow grave just sit by three
Hiya, boss.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jeff. Go right on with what you were doing.
No, Mr. Lawrence. You arrived just in time. The entertainment's over.
What? What are you talking about, Miss Matson?
I said the show's over. Is the sheriff around?
Yes, he and his men are outside. They're just leaving for the night.
You better call him back, right now. The Duchess is dead in her cabin.
What?
Poisoned.
Wait a minute.
Sheriff! Sheriff Hobbs!
Is that you, Lord?
That's right. Can you and your men come back for a spell? Seems we have more trouble.
Okay. We'll be over as soon as we tie up the horse.
Now then, what's this all about?
Well, I could tell you, Lawrence, but I think it'd be more proper coming from the Star himself. Don't you think so, Jeff?
Looks like this is it, doesn't it? You know, you're smart, Miss Matson. Like they say in that ad, never underestimate the power of a woman.
That's right. That letter the Duchess wrote proves your point.
What? How'd you get hold of that letter? I thought she wrote a duplicate. Is that it?
Like you say, never underestimate the power of a woman.
Wait a moment. I don't understand what's going on here.
Go ahead, Miss Matson. You tell her. Looks like I'm not the Star any longer.
Well, Lawrence, up to about 2 weeks ago, you had as nice and gentle a cowpoke working for you as there ever was. Then the Duchess arrived. She wasn't kidding when she claimed to have mingled with nobility, important people. As a matter of fact, she had an inside tip about your ranch and the one next door, Ferguson's place, Glen Valley. Didn't you receive a fantastic offer for your property from a big wine company just recently, Lawrence?
Why, yes, I did.
So did Ferguson. They were going to merge the two places and make it one of the world's largest vineyards.
I didn't know about that part of it.
But the Duchess did. She wanted in on the ground floor. That's why she came out here. She tried to talk business with Ferguson, but he'd have none of it. So, in one of her boozy moments, she hit upon the idea of doing away with Ferguson. But she didn't have the nerve to go through with it. That's when she approached Jeff here and cut him in on the deal. Jeff was tired of the poor but honest cowboy routine, saw a chance to make some heavy sugar, and went along with the gag. Right, Jeff?
She's got it straight so far, boss. Jeff, I can't believe my ears.
Oh, that's nothing. Just wait a while. Jeff and the Duchess were out riding one afternoon when, by chance, Ferguson rode up, too, just where the boundaries of the two ranches meet. While the Duchess talked to Ferguson, Jeff sneaked around and back and bashed in his head. They hauled him up to that draw where you bumped into us this afternoon. I know now why you ordered us out of there. On the other side of that snarl of brush and manzanita, there's a quicksand pit. That is now Ferguson's permanent residence.
This is terrible. Terrible.
In a hurry to dispose of your late neighbor, they left shoe prints along the bank of the creek. And they also overlooked Ferguson's hat with his initials on it. I'm mighty glad you came by when you did, Lawrence. After I had noticed the boot prints, I think Jeff was going to dump me into the quicksand, too.
You're right again. After the boss sent us back in, I sort of figured to get you tonight instead.
And then, Lawrence, you were going to be next. Because in your will, you would name Jeff as your sole heir, is that right?
That's right. I loved him like a son.
Then the Duchess and Jeff could have swung a hard bargain with that wine outfit. All very smooth, except for one thing.
One thing? I'm kind of curious about that one thing, Miss Matson.
Alcohol, Jeff. It's not only lifting to begin with, but also acts as a depressing agent. The Duchess had been imbibing all day, and after dinner she arrived at that point of depression, realized what a horrible thing she had done, and she wrote the full story about the wine company and Jeff's duplicity and made a copy. You were afraid of that yourself, Jeff. That's when you went out and slipped the old girl a lethal Mickey. I heard her groaning and went in to investigate. She said it was indigestion, but I knew differently. Her breath. And I knew, too, that she'd be dead within 5 minutes. Then I saw her shoes, Cuban heels with mud caked on the inner side of the arch. That's when I had a hunch the letter she was writing had a definite meaning. You overlooked it, Jeff. I found it. Where only a woman would think of looking. Tucked inside her bosom.
Jeff.
I'm sorry, Lauren. I had you figured wrong from the start. I was the one who was wrong. You aren't hard at all. You're as soft as putty. Well, Jeff, here comes the sheriff.
Yeah, so I see. Well, I'm ready for him. You can't beat a royal flush with a pair of deuces. Or should I say dunces? Ah, go. There won't be any fuss. And all of a sudden, it dawns on me. People should accept their lot. If you're born to be a cowboy, just stay a cowboy. And if you're born a millionaire, don't fight that either. Well, goodbye, Miss Matson. And I'm glad the boss happened along when he did, because I don't think quicksand would look good on you.
Like Jeff said, he went quietly. No trouble. Too bad he wasn't content to be just a ranch hand, simple and unspoiled. Because as Rembrandt had noticed, he did have wonderful shoulders. He played the guitar, he sang, and he made fine old fashions. All in all, a very nice guy, except for two vices, hitting from the behind and poisoning. The Valley of the Moon? Oh, I'll go back. It's lovely. After all, one man with a snarl brain can't undo the work of the original master painter.
Listen again next week at this same time. For excitement and adventure, just dial...
Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
Heard tonight were Helen Cleve as the Duchess, Lou Tobin as Lawrence, and Clancy Hayes as Jeff. Henry Leth is Inspector Mallard and Jack Thomas as Rembrandt. The program stars Natalie Masters as Candy and is written and produced by Monty Masters. Sound effects were created by Bill Brownell and Jay Rendon. Eloise Rowan is heard at the organ. The characters in tonight's story are entirely fictitious, and any resemblance to actual people is purely coincidental. The program came to you from San Francisco. Dudley Manlove speaking. You are tuned for the stars on NBC.
Thank you again for listening, and please don't forget to follow, review, leave a 5-star rating, and to share.